Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I love that last item in the news. There are delays on the 8th Avenue line for what the MTA calls a rail condition. That narrows it down. Monday's new recommendations for starting breast cancer screening at age 50 for most women instead of age 40 caused immediate and intense reaction. Now, today, a different organization is recommending fewer pap smears. For years, we've been taught that early detection saves lives, and the new medical findings have many people wondering if they are really evidence-based or cost-based or just indifferent to women's lives and health. New York Times science reporter Gina Colata has been covering this story, and she joins me now to try and sort through the recommendations and the science and the politics. Welcome back to WNYC, Gina Colata.
Thank you. It's good to talk to you again.
And listeners, our lines are open for your questions and comments about the pap smear and mammogram recommendations. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Confused? Gina's going to do her best to clear this up for you. And Gina, let's start with the change in recommendations for breast cancer screening. What are the new guidelines? How exactly are they different? Is it just start at 50 rather than 40?
Well, what they're trying to say is that women should be informed about the risks and benefits of mammograms at any age and should be able to make their own decisions about when to start. When they say they recommend against, this is what they tell me, they say they recommend against routine screening for women in their 40s, for most women in their 40s. That doesn't mean don't have it. That means take a careful look at what the risks and benefits are and decide for yourself or in consultation with your doctor if you still want to go ahead.
Based on some kind of individual or family history?
No. Based on your understanding, here's the problem. When they do studies of breast cancer screening, they don't say, oh, let's take a group of women who have this family history and do a huge study with them. And let's take another group of women without this family history. They don't have that kind of information, partly because you have to screen a lot of people to get information anyway, and they don't sort them out according to family history. So for family history, you have to make a judgment call. It's not really known whether, if you have a strong family history, you would be benefited by more mammograms or not, which sounds crazy.
It does.
But you could also say, maybe if you have a strong family history, it doesn't really, maybe your cancer is going to occur in your 50s. Maybe it doesn't matter if you have a mammogram in your 40s.
So
or
on
maybe
what
if you have a strong family history, a mammogram won't help you because your cancers are slow-growing or fast-growing and mammograms don't help you.
So on what basis would an individual woman in her 40s make a decision?
You would say to yourself, I understand that if I have mammograms in my 40s, I have a 50-50 chance of being called back because there's something suspicious. And the chance that I will be saved from a breast cancer death in 20 years, one out of every, 1,900 women will be saved from a breast cancer death. But in the meantime, there will be many more women who will be treated for breast cancers that would never have threatened their lives. And that's the big change in the thinking of the group, that they're more aware of the fact that breast cancer, like almost every other cancer, can either not grow at all, grow very, very slowly and never be noticed, can grow so fast that it doesn't help when you find it, or in a minority of the cases, can grow at just the right rate so that if you have a mammogram and find it and treat it, you will be saved from a breast cancer death. That's the change in thinking.
Is there a public health moral dilemma here, which is that these recommendations do sacrifice a small number of lives in order to avoid a lot of unnecessary treatment? And so they have to ask themselves, is the unnecessary treatment of many women really worse than the few lives lost?
It's a very difficult problem because you don't know when you're being treated whether you're one of those people who never needed that chemotherapy and radiation and all that because your life was never threatened, or whether it saves you. They do know that more people are getting unnecessary treatment than are being saved. But to go back to your question, the public health dilemma, there's a judgment call. When do you start screening? There's also women who get breast cancer in their 30s. Do you start then? Do you start in your 20s? Do you screen every day? You have to make a judgment call at some point with all of these tests, as I understand it. And they decided to do the cutoff at an age where it's much more clear that you're going to get a benefit. For example, with women in their 40s, it's hard to show that there's any benefit. And the biggest study that, and the only study that actually looked starting at age 40 rather than starting in the 40s somewhere, was a gigantic study in England with 50,000 women who were screened starting at 40 and 100,000 who were not screened. They followed them for 10 years and found no statistically significant difference in deaths from breast cancer. Every study that's ever been done of women in their 40s found no statistically significant reduction in deaths from breast cancer. The way they get that 15% reduction is by combining all the studies and trying to tease something out of it. It's a difficult decision because the benefits are marginal and there are real risks. And you could say it's a judgment call. We'll start in the 40s because we see something. That's up to you. Or you could say we'll start in the 50s because the benefit is greater.
Brian Lehrer.
There's more cancer. That's why it's greater.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with New York Times health correspondent Gina Collada and Andy in Montclair. You're on WNYC. Hello, Andy.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I am in my 40s, and I was just diagnosed with breast cancer. And had I not had a mammogram, this may not have been discovered. So, therefore, I feel that, obviously, you know how I feel. I feel that we should, you know, reinstate mammograms at the age of 40.
They aren't saying don't have them. What they're saying is make up your own mind about what you want to do. And it's difficult because when you've had your cancer found in your 40s, anybody, all of us would say, thank goodness I had that mammogram. But the problem is that no one ever knows which of those cancers would have been deadly.
Of course, and but I'm concerned about the women who wouldn't go and pay on their own for their insurance. Now the insurance companies, now that there's been this new task force with the new recommendation, the insurance companies may only cover women starting at 50.
I asked the insurance industry what do the state laws say, and they said that every state except for Utah mandates that women in their 40s get coverage. They actually don't have any choice. What would happen is if the lawmakers in each state decide to change the laws. But as the laws stand now, they can't take that away.
Okay, and personally, as someone who did have breast cancer, I don't like the word statistically significant because it's very significant if it's your mother, your sister, your daughter, your best friend.
I know.
So the word significant, it saved me.
Andy,
it's a problem because the problem always comes down to this sort of what sounds like the cold statistics and the science versus the personal stories. And when you hear the personal stories, every human being would say, oh, you know, thank goodness this person had a mammogram. But when you see the statistics, and that's what this group looks at, you have to say, overall, do you want to do it or not? And they say each woman has to make up her own mind.
Andy, thank you for calling and talking openly about your situation, and I hope your treatment goes well. And she mentioned and reflects the uproar around the fear that insurance companies will quit paying for the mammograms, and how much just due to the fact that we can't get our heads around the idea that knowing more about what's in our bodies is not better might be reflected in government. And then opponents of Obama-style health care reform take the next step, and they say, well, look, they'll have one of these, you know, effectiveness comparison commissions, and then the government plan will stop covering mammograms in their 40s, and then all the private plans will stop covering mammograms in their 40s. So there's a chain reaction here that concerns a lot of people.
Well, I think you have to sort of also look at the state laws, and that means it's going to be very difficult for anybody, public, private, any plan, to take away mammograms for women in their 40s. The state lawmakers would have to make those changes. And then, in addition, of course, insurers it's a marketing thing, what they offer. That's why they offer a lot of things that some people would say are not useful. For example, I had a health plan that used to pay me to belong to a health club. And that, you know, that's a marketing thing. They market their plan by saying, oh, we'll pay the members who join health clubs. They pay for things, they pay for various alternative, some pay for alternative medicine treatments, as others would say, have never been shown to have any evidence of usefulness. It's a marketing thing. And my guess, although I'm certainly not an insurance company, is that if they feel that they will not be able to market their plans without mammograms, they're not going to take them away.
Joyce in Manhattan, excuse me, in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with New York Times health correspondent Gina Colata. Hello.
Hi. I've heard the word risk used several times during this program and never explained. And it has always been my feeling that that mammogram is such a disturbing test that it could possibly be a risk and a cause of cancer. And I've wondered if any work has ever been done on that. I don't take them. And I'm well in my, and leaning towards old age, never old.
Well, you know, and actually, yeah.
39.
Jack Benny's 39.
They do mention in the report that there is a very small, but not zero, chance that the radiation from mammograms can itself instigate cancer. But that's, they mention it in passing. That's not their greatest concern.
And don't the new guidelines seek to limit the number of total mammograms that women get for that reason?
No, that's not the reason. What they did was a lot of fiscal. Now, remember, this was years in the making with lots and lots of groups working on it, published papers reviewed by, like, one of the papers was reviewed by 15 different scientists. I mean, it goes on and on. This is not just sort of a back-of-the-hand calculation. And what they said was, that they analyzed: do you get additional benefit finding more cancers, say, preventing more breast cancer deaths? Do you get additional benefit if you are screened every year as compared to every other year? And the answer was no, you do not. You said you prevent just as many deaths by screening every other year as screening every year. That's why they suggest, not mandate, that women consider being screened every other year, and they get, and you have the chance that you'll have an unnecessary biopsy, but you get exactly the same prevention of breast cancer deaths.
You're making the distinction, which I think is important, between cancers found and fatal cancers. And you wrote a story a month ago about studies showing that screening for breast cancer and prostate cancer were finding more cancers, but death rates weren't dropping at the same pace. So
right.
That's a key part of what's behind these recommendations.
The group said that was a lot of their deliberations was over this question of what they call overdiagnosis. There is becoming increasingly clear that for almost every cancer, there are a lot of them that we would call cancers, but they don't do anything to you. They're just there, and you would never know you had them if you hadn't been screened. Sometimes they go away. Sometimes they just stop growing and sit there. They're not life-threatening. But you don't know when you see one whether it's going to be life-threatening or not. So when you screen, you're going to find a lot of things that you say, this is cancer, it has to be treated. If you hadn't screened, you would never have known it was there, would never have treated it, and you would have gone on with your life.
Corey in Manhattan wants to follow up on that point. Corey, you're on WNYC.
Hi. It is the exact same thing as the PSA test, and what I can't understand
is... For prostate cancer.
Yeah, exactly. It produced a whole lot of false positives and a whole lot of biopsies that were unnecessary. But what amazes me is the concept that there's somehow some value in suppressing scientific or medical speech or opinion simply because you don't like what it's saying. And as the person you have on here pointed out, you can always go to your legislature and say that insurance companies have to give provide mammograms or pay for mammograms every day from age 13, if that's what you really want. But that's got nothing to do with whether or not scientists and doctors think it's a good idea. And it's amazing to me that somehow people think that they can make the medical opinion go away, and somehow that has a substantive effect. It's sticking your head in the sand.
Corey, thank you. And Gina, your colleague, Times columnist Gail Collins, suggested this decade be called the decade of medical backtracking. And a lot of that backtracking seems to involve women's health with hormone replacement at the top of the list. Is that the name of the game from here on out for a while? What was all behind all these reversals? And so many of them, men and women alike, have to do with these screenings.
Well, actually, with the hormones, what happened was that there are some women's groups, some advocacy groups, that insisted that a proper study be done on whether or not hormones after menopause actually improve health. And to everybody's shock, maybe not everybody's shock, but many people's shock, they actually made things worse. So that was actually women that called for that. It was the National Women's Health Network was really standing up and screaming, we have to study this. You can't just give these to people and say it's going to make them better. You have this logic that you replace a hormone that people would lose. They said you're not replacing it. You're giving people a drug, and we have to find out whether it works. And it turned out not to be good for people. So that was that. So it's not like scientists are suddenly, you know, saying get rid of everything. I think there's become, you know, science evolves and there's increasing understanding of things. With overdiagnosis and cancer, that used to be a hypothetical possibility. Then they found it in a very rare children's cancer, and they said, oh, well, it's just a rare children's cancer. Then they started finding it every place they looked. And then they said, you know what, a lot of cancers don't go anywhere. But it took a while. It's only recently that they've been getting this kind of evidence. So as science evolves, the scientists who sometimes tell me that they have a lot of trouble communicating, and I think it's, I can understand why, communicating this to the public, they're not, you know, they're not changing their minds. They're evolving. The evolving data is making them rethink things that
right.
seemed so obvious a while ago.
It's the nature of science. And over time, hopefully, they'll understand more which cancers actually need to be treated and which ones aren't really a threat, even though they're cancer. Jacqueline in Brooklyn is calling in, an OBGYN, who I think wants to compare the new mammogram recommendation to the new pap smear recommendation. Correct, doctor?
Yes and no. I actually have a comment about each recommendation. In regards to the mammogram, I think that when you're dealing with such a common cancer, I think we have to be very careful as to what our recommendations for mammograms is. Because from a medical legal perspective, there are lawsuits with delayed diagnosis. And I think when you take a 40-year-old or a 42-year-old and they are diagnosed with cancer, and it has been delayed, I think you have a major problem from my perspective. I don't think that you should do simply defensive medicine, and I don't think that you should just act based on that, but I think you have to take into account the frequency of the disease, the possible screening test, and the possible consequences. I mean, for one of the recommendations is that breast exams are no, you know, you shouldn't do breast exams because they are really of no benefit. I happen to disagree with that very much, because I do think that if there's nothing there, there's nothing there. But if there's something that may be suspicious and needs to be examined by a physician or by a healthcare, then it should be done. So I think that recommendation is really very totally off base. In regards to the pap smear, we say, you know, if you've had, I think that what we recommend and what people hear are two very different things. The recommendation is that if you've had three normal pap smears consecutive years, then you should go. Then you should have pap smears every 2 years, or I think in older women every 3. However, I think patients take that as, well, if I don't need a pap smear, I don't need to go to the OBGYN. And again, that is a huge mistake, because we're not only there for the pap smear, we're there for exams. We do breast exams. We do pelvic exams. We look for other issues as well. So I think we have to be careful.
I want to clarify something about the breast self-exams, because that's one of the things that the task force told me keeps being misunderstood. What they did was they said that doctors should not spend time teaching it to women. They never said that women should never do it. The reason that they said doctors shouldn't spend time teaching it to women is there are two gigantic studies, one in China, one in Russia, where you say, well, why there? Well, maybe I think it's because women hadn't been routinely doing it there. And they randomly assigned women to be taught to do it or not. and they asked, did it affect the breast cancer death rate? It didn't. But everybody emphasizes over and over and over again that if a woman finds a lump, of course you should go in and have a mammogram, because this is not a screening mammogram anymore. Mm-hmm. This is a diagnostic one. They never said don't examine your breast. They just said if you're a doctor and you have limited time to spend with a patient, you should spend your time on things that might make more of a difference to their health, because they've studied this and it didn't make a difference.
And Jacqueline, thank you for your call. And just one last thought with respect to perspective. There are still a lot of women not getting any mammograms, right? The Susan G. Komen Foundation says more important than the timing of mammograms at all is the fact that one-third of age-appropriate women never get them. So are the new recommendations likely to improve that?
Well, it depends on what you mean by improve, Brian. They're saying you make up your own mind if and when you want to get it.
At any
age.
And
everybody has different values.
Right.
Everybody has different things they fear.
Is it values or is it
overdone?
Is it values? Is it ignorance? Is it lack of access to health care?
Well, no, I think that what they're saying is given equal knowledge, given equal access, different women will come down differently on when and how often and even mm-hmm. whether to have mammograms. And that you should respect women's decisions, that you shouldn't say everybody has to do this or this. This is your chance as women to empower yourselves, they say, and make an informed choice. This is them, not me. I mean, I'm the reporter. I'm the messenger here. I mean, I don't want people to think that I'm telling people things. This is what they say, and they said this to me repeatedly. They want to empower women to decide for themselves what to do and when to do it and how often to do it. And that's why they're trying to provide this information.
Gina Collada, New York Times health correspondent. Thank you for coming on with us.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. Still to come, hunger in America on the rise, supplies at soup kitchens and food pantries in our area, not so much. And our take on the Sarah Palin book coming up, we will look at an index made by an independent observer from the New Republic, since the book itself didn't provide an index. Stay with us.